Very good. Okay, most people have now got their places. And as you all know, every Friday evening, I give a talk on ways where the Buddhist teachings can be applied to our daily lives to make it useful for people. Not just a theory, but something which we can practice. And because I've been doing this job over 30 years, there's hardly a topic which I haven't talked about in these talks. Even giving lectures on Buddhism and bananas, Buddhism and coffins, all sorts of interesting talks to actually elicit some new angles on how to live one's life. But this evening, again, not knowing what to talk about, I just asked one of the nuns, and she mentioned something which I haven't talked about much, and that is trust, and the importance of it, how to develop it, reinstate it, and if trust is given to you, how to value it so much you don't want to destroy it. So this talk is about trust. And of course, one of the greatest examples of trust, and I use this as an analogy sometimes in meditation, is what I've seen when I've seen a mother carrying her baby in a shopping center. And sometimes that baby is in one arm, a shopping trolley or a bag is in the mother's other arm. And there's lots of people jostling in that shopping center. And that baby is fast asleep. It trusts its mother so much that its mother won't drop it, that it can totally relax and let go and go to sleep. It's amazing that the baby has so much trust. And I've never seen a mother drop the baby. Maybe you have, but I've never seen that. Apparently, my grandma used to tell me that once when my mother took me, not to the shopping center, in London those days was just the high street where all the shops were, that she left me outside and came back home forgetting me. But I've only got my grandmother's word for that, so I was not traumatized. I think I must have enjoyed my solitary practice even as a baby. Didn't notice my mum had left me outside the shopping centre. Fortunately, no one took me away. I mustn't have been a very attractive baby, I don't know. But anyway, you know, your trust. And that sort of blind trust, you know, we have that when we begin life. And sometimes out of foolishness, now we apply that trust in so many other different aspects of our life. And of course, because the trust is not combined with wisdom, we trust foolishly and we get hurt and burned. And when we get hurt and burned because we trusted, we were let down, we were left outside the shops in the high street of Acton in West London. Sometimes, good job I didn't remember that. But because that happens sometimes, we lose our trust. Rather, we actually give up trusting. Go into our shell, fearful, hurt once, never want to be hurt again. And that is not being wise. What we do, we're overreacting. So instead, when you do get let down, we don't take away the trust of our fellow human beings. Instead, we make our trust a little bit, refine it, be more wise, so we don't have so many expectations. It is the expectations which hurt us, not the lack of trust. Because human beings, sometimes with the best will in the world, you can't make it on time. With the best will in the world, you say the wrong things. With the best will in the world, sometimes you make mistakes. As I often say, is there anybody in this room who's never made a mistake? You've all made mistakes. In fact, it would be weird if you did not make a mistake in your life. Which means it is normal to make mistakes. So expect people to make mistakes. We sometimes, our trust is not wise trust. In other words, we allow ourselves to get disappointed simply because of our lack of understanding of what the world can give. And we want it to give something it can never give. For example, I travel around the world and giving talks all over the place. And so that I see sometimes it has to happen, aircraft get delayed. Is it the fault of the aircraft? No, it's not the fault of the aircraft. The aircraft doesn't have a consciousness. Is it the pilot? No, it may be the pilot had an argument with his wife that day. Is it the fault of... There's all sorts of things why the flights get delayed. So because the flight gets delayed, I don't lose my trust. No, in the aircraft, I still arrive there on time. I remember that time I was going to give some talks in Indonesia. And I turned up at Perth Airport to find that the flight, a Garuda flight, it wasn't just delayed, it was cancelled. And there I was, not having a flight, and even because I'm a monk with no money. They dropped me off at the airport and I wanted to check in and there was no place to check in, the flight was cancelled. I had no money to get back to the temple. And it was the morning and I was hungry, I had no food. Oh, thank you. That's one of the reasons why I make sure I keep plenty spare. So if ever I get caught out like that in the future, you always carry a bit spare in here. So you never starve. So there, but did you get angry? Of course not. I didn't lose my trust. You know, there's always something you can do. So what happened? Garuda, it was cancelled. I asked why. It's natural. That was a time of the bird flu epidemic. So I figured out straight away, Garuda, it's a bird. It must have caught the flu. That's why it never turned up. So I told everybody, that's why it never turned up. Bird flu, even birds, Garuda catches the flu. Anyway, so I actually missed a talk. Many people waiting for that talk that night. And I told, I managed to get some, talk to somebody and get to ask them, can I please use a telephone to call someone and eventually call the organizers of the talk, I'm not coming that night. And I said, this is your Dharma talk this evening. You know, you can always expect the unexpected. Just because your face is on a poster and it's supposed to turn up, sometimes it just doesn't happen. It's nobody's fault. This is life. And this is the teaching for this evening over in Indonesia that day. The teaching this evening is, yes, you hope things will turn out, but life never goes according to plan. And that's something you can trust. That things will always go wrong. My life has been a series of mistakes. That's how I ended up here, giving a talk. You know my biggest mistake? Oh, this was just such bad luck. Why I ended up in Perth. I don't know if you know how I ended up in Perth and why I'm still here after 30 so years. That when I was a young monk, you know, very inspired, always really wanted to do the very best. So I decided as a monk, as soon as I ordain, I will try and limit my desires. It doesn't matter where I live, where I go, I'll leave that up to my teacher to decide. So I made a vow that I would never ask to go anywhere, I would just wait till Ajahn Chah sends me there. And when he sends me there, then I'll wait until he asks me to come back. And I thought that was what I would do. And so I kept that. And then, was it 33 years ago, they needed a monk here in Perth to come with Ajahn Chakra to open up Buddhism here. So Ajahn Chah, he sent me here to Perth. 1 month after sending me to Perth, Ajahn Chah had a stroke. He could not speak anymore, so he couldn't ask me to come back. And I've been stuck here ever since. And that is true. So it's just bad timing, that's all. Never mind. But anyway, even though, you cannot trust where you will be and where you will go, you cannot trust plans. But what you can trust is that whatever works out in your life, whatever twist and turn happens to you in your life, you can always make something good out of it. That is the beautiful teaching of the law of karma. Whatever life gives you, what it gives you, that's a result of old karma. Having to come to Perth, being a teacher, that must have been some karma from the past. But that's not important. What is always important is what you do with the situations which life gives you. How you make it work. And my experience, what I teach others by example and also just by word of mouth, doesn't matter what happens to you in life, you can always make something good out of it. One of my inspirations when I was a young monk, I heard this story, was of one of the senior Thai monks. Many of you, a few Thai people here somewhere. Yeah, anyway. That they've just after a lot of politicking, they've elected the new head monk in Thailand. We call it Sangha Raja. Don't know why they call it Raja, king of the Sangha. But anyway, remember the president of the Sangha. That'd be more better. Anyway, the king of the Sangha. So it's a prestigious position, and sometimes people really want that. Absolutely crazy. To be a leader, to be a boss. The only reason I ended up being a boss here, being the leader, was because the previous monk, he left, he disrobed. And he left me. I was doing so well. All my plans were just working out so well. I was like tailgating. He was doing all the work and I was just enjoying a nice peaceful monastery, having a wonderful time. It's always say that the head truck in the convoy gets all the bugs on the windscreen. And that's now me. So he left me really in the poo. But I always remember when you get left in the poo, dig it under the mango tree and make it work. So you just get in there and just make it work. So I've always found whatever life gives you, you can always make it work. And certainly for me, I trusted just that as long as you give it everything you've got, you try your very best, and eventually it'll work out, one way or the other. So whatever you do in life, you trust this wonderful law of karma. That's one thing I can trust. Because that is, I know how it works. If you really put a lot of care and kindness and hard work into what you're doing, eventually it actually comes to fruition. And look, many of you, you've been around this place for such a long time. You've seen actually how we started out. A very, very small place over in North Perth, just a small house. And I remember when I came there and looked at that small house. At the time I asked the treasurer, can I look at the accounts? When I looked at the accounts, what did I see? I saw a debt of $49,000 to the bank, and the house worth was $50,000. And that's all we had, $1,000 in equity. That's all we were worth. And that was just very tough at that time. But we continued working hard. And when we got some place for a monastery down in Serpentine, know, as many people at the time told us afterwards, they never really thought we'd make it. You know, for people actually to give donations to monks. They'd never seen monks before. You know, a lot of times people would walk in the streets and they'd say, why don't you get a proper job? And they told that to me many times. There was this one time, I remember, again, we were just working so hard, I was loading up our little truck, not as a truck, it was one of those combi vans, loading up with stuff to take down to Serpentine for building, and this lady came out, 13 or 14 years of age. She was visiting her grandma in the house next door. She came out and looked at me, loading up the combi van, looked at me in my robes, and she put her hands on her waist like this, and looked me up and down with as much disgust which a 14-year-old can manage to bring up, and said to me, you're dressed like a girl. That's sick. Yuck. And you know what, I thought that was so funny. I just burst out laughing, because that's something which I can trust. You know, no one can actually offend you. And that's how I learned from Ajahn Chah. Whenever anyone tried to offend him or did anything really weird or strange, he never got angry. We actually use laughter instead of anger as a way of dealing with things. It's a much better response, because I trust in the power of laughter, and I really, really don't trust at all in the power of getting angry. You try that when somebody tries to upset you. They call you a pig, they call you fat, they call you an idiot, whatever they do. And you laugh instead of getting angry. And then it will confirm they were right, you are an idiot. They leave you alone. I don't mind being an idiot. But what it is, you don't respond the way that they want you to. So when I just laughed, I thought, how? You know, that she just walked away, she didn't know what to make of me. Not only was I dressed funny, I acted funny. But it was a little thing, though. I trusted in that. So little by little, you know, we trusted, as long as we're doing good stuff, being good, kind monks, eventually the support will come. And that's 33 years ago now. And anyone who goes over to Serpentine Monastery, look at it, goes over to Jhana Groves, Meditation Retreat Center, goes over to Dharamsala. You people in West Australia should be very proud. I do travel around. We've got the best monasteries in, certainly Australia, some of the world as well. And you say, oh, it's because we've got the best monks and the best nuns. And I say, no, we've got the best lay supporters, you. I also trust in praise. Because praise is something I really trust in. And because when you praise someone, you're pointing out some really good qualities. When I say that, you know, you are the best lay supporters, the best Buddhists, you know, just coming here of an evening, looking after the monks and the nuns. Look, the proof is this. How kind and generous are you? The proof is this. You fed me so much over the last 33 years. This is your fault. Because of your kindness and your generosity. And yeah, you just, and honestly, it's very true. This is no exaggeration. I go to people's houses and they give me some food and they keep on saying, eat more, eat more. You do. You made this, not me. But no, it is just the trust in like praise and the goodness of human beings, because once you praise somebody, you're actually looking at their good qualities. And those good qualities are always there. And so Mahayana, they say the Buddha nature is in all human beings. I use that, the simile of the lotus. In a lotus, it may look very dirty on the outside, but in every lotus, the most beautiful, beautiful petals on the inside, so fragrant. Look at a lotus, it's a very good symbol in Buddhism. Closed up at night time, when it opens up inside, it's just so fragrant and beautiful. And if you didn't know what a lotus was, you pass it by thinking there can't be anything beautiful in there. I use that whenever I see people in prison, people who've done some very bad things in their life, people who have not been the very best, who have let people down, who were given trust, and the trust was not sort of lived up to. In those people, I look at them deep inside and see the beautiful stuff. I praise them. And when I praise them, then they see that beautiful stuff themselves. And when they see that beautiful stuff themselves, it comes up. It comes up to the surface. Whatever you praise, whatever you talk about, you're encouraging the other person. That's actually how life works. And I trust that because I've been practicing that in my own life with other people for such a long time. The best way I gave a talk at the Cancer Wellness Association, and they're merging with Solaris. And so the CEO of Solaris introduced me on Tuesday afternoon, and he said he was the CEO of Solaris, and Ross Taylor, good old friend, he said he was the CEO of the Wellness Association, so I had to get in on the act, and I said I'm the CEM of Bodhinyana Monastery. So what does CEM mean? Chief Executive Monk. Well, that's pretty accurate. So, try to get in on the act, live up to what other people are doing. But you always, when you go to places like that, wherever it is, you always praise people, build them up, encourage them, because then you get the best out of everybody. So the chief executive monk of Bodhinyana Monastery, I always try and encourage, praise, build up people as much as I possibly could, and that encourages people to have a much more positive attitude and to become better monks. And I've been to places where you've always been criticized, put down, all your faults are always pointed out to you and to others, and my goodness, you get that all the time. Does that work? People are always bagging each other, pointing out the faults. What it does is that people tend to live up to those faults and get worse. But honestly, one of the problems with the political situations and systems in our world is people always point out the faults in our politicians. Very rarely do you actually point out all the good stuff they do. So much so when I say that, you think, what a joke, they don't do any good stuff. They work their butts off. I know many, many politicians really trying their best to help, to serve. I said, was it 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, had the offered breakfast by your Prime Minister, Ranil Wickremesinghe of Sri Lanka. In my position, you get to know these people. When you get to know these people, you know, you find out that a lot of them have really got a good, they really want to try and help, but sometimes they're hamstrung just by the difficulties of the system. When I was over in the Cancer Support Association, I was mentioning over there that the idea of politics, because we always have these ideas how we can change things and make things better, and this was, I hope I didn't say this here last week, the candidate? No. You know that we're having an election here in Western Australia shortly, next month or so, and we have all these candidates standing for election. And I don't know if you know where that word candidate originates from. It originates from the political system in ancient Rome, in the Senate in ancient Rome, over maybe about 2,000 years ago. And there, anyone who was standing for election to the Roman Senate had to wear white clothes. That was signifying that they were standing for election. And the word for white in Latin is candid. That's where it comes from. A candidate was a person who wore white, not to play cricket, not to play bowls, not as an anagaric or anagarika in the monastery, wearing white because they were standing for election. And the colour white was a symbol of their purity. In other words, their virtue and good conduct in their life so far. The white is always that symbol of purity, which I often mention when I have the privilege to do wedding ceremonies with Dennis over there, our marriage celebrant. Always white is it. In a marriage, it is the custom for the woman, the bride, to wear white. She wears a white dress as a symbol of her purity. And why does the groom always wear black? You guess. But these were candidates wearing white. And the reason they were white, the purity of their conduct so far. In the Roman Senate, people were elected to office never on what they promised. You can't trust promises. There's an obvious reason why, because you can't predict the future. No one can. How can you promise you're going to do this and you're going to do that? You don't know whether that's going to be possible in 3 months, 6 months, a year's time. Economic situation, geopolitical situation, so much changes. So they were never elected on what they promised. They were only elected on what they had done so far. On their past record, never their future promises. What a beautiful situation that would be if we forgot about what politicians promised us. But what did they do before? Because that's something you can actually trust. Past records, you can check that out. But future promises, who can trust that? Can't, never can do. Which is one of the reasons why the situation in politics is always so disappointing. Because, and it's an obvious breach of trust, because even the very beginning, it's an impossible situation. It's unwise to ever believe promises. It's one of the reasons why, as a monk, I was always taught this. Never make a promise unless you can really, really keep it. So a lot of times, you know, if people invite me, can you come and do this ceremony? You say, well, I'll try my very best. But you can't promise. Just like that talk in Indonesia. I'll try my very best, but I can never promise that it's going to happen. All those promises, when they're made without wisdom, just because you want to make the promise, it sounds good, that leads to a lack of trust. Because there was no wisdom in that promise to begin with. Letting people down because it wasn't really made with wisdom in the first place. So, all we really can do is, well, whatever happens, we'll try our very best. We'll do the very best which we can do for you. That's something which we can promise to do. But not concrete promises. So it's just like, you know, when two people, they come together, say, in a wedding, and they say, I will love you forever. You make that promise, but you know, is that really a promise which you can keep? Can other people keep it? It sounds good, doesn't it? But be wise instead. You say, well, let's keep it real. I will love you most days. That's pretty good. But I'm going to have my off day when I really hate your guts. I don't wonder what I'd do to marry you. What happened? But at least, you know, you're being honest. And when you're honest, you understand what life can give. There'll be some days when I just really, really just don't even want to see you. Be honest with that. And so you understand that, okay, take a bit of time out, but I'll always be back here for you afterwards. So you're being realistic. When you make realism, wisdom, before you make promises, then the trustworthiness is really important. And it actually is something which is real and you can depend upon. Because we do need to have some trust in this world, otherwise the whole world becomes just a lot, just so frustrating and difficult and also scary as well. So yeah, the mother, the baby trusts the mother just a little bit out of stupidity, doesn't really know. but the mother lives up to that trust. And it's the same with, again, in a relationship. You know that might happen, but as long as you set the parameters at the very beginning, you're realistic. And then you can trust the other person, you know, has the right, they've got kindness. The trust of the person is trying their best, doing their best, is actually developing themselves. It's the trust that there is a development, there is a practice, there is a way of learning so that we can become kinder, better human beings. And that's one of the things which I trust in, karma, the path of practice. I trust in that because I've seen that for so many years, being a Buddhist teacher and leader, seeing people, for example, nuns, young monks, you know, come through the system and learning to become better human beings. When I do go overseas, and when you try and collect donations for monks' monastery or nuns' monastery, which is also part of my job, it costs money to train monks, I often call Bodhinyana Monastery and Dharmasara Monastery factories. Monk factories and nun factories. And I do that overseas because in many places, even in Sri Lanka of all places, they import my products. Not just myself, but Ajahn Bhumali and Ajahn Nisavano. There's a lot of my monks who trained at Bodhinyana factory who are now in Sri Lanka and other places. And in fact, I was telling a few people because that some visitors to my monastery, Bodhinyana Monastery, were wondering where all the monks were. And actually, we had two monks at the Cambodian temple. We had three monks over in a temple in Melbourne. We had a couple of monks, or myself, over in Sri Lanka. So I was telling people we've gone from a factory creating monks and nuns to a hire company called Rent a Monk Service. So other temples who need good monks, we actually can hire out monks. And just, you want a monk, just give me a call and I'll rent out a couple of good ones for you. So that's what was happening overseas. Rent a Monk Service. Have you started Rent a Nun Service yet? There's a couple of nuns over in... Where have they gone? Have they gone over to Santi Monastery in Sydney yet?
They're back.
They're back, oh yeah. So, you know, once we hired out to Sydney, they're back now. Are they in good shape? Were they returned in the same shape which they were let out? Very good, thank goodness. But you can actually... I trust in that whole system. That, you know, you take a young man, a young woman, or even an old man, old woman, and actually you just train them with kindness, not with force. You train them with encouragement, never with putting them down and criticizing them. You train them just to give them opportunities to grow, and they take those opportunities. And you train them with patience, never actually giving them deadlines. And little by little, they actually grow. I trust in that system, because we have created some really, really good monks and nuns, you know, in our monk and nun factories here in Perth. And I also see that system working for all our lay community here. I trust that this actually works, simply because I understand the psychology just of a human being trying to find their way in this world. Most people just want encouragement. And also just the permission to be who they are. That lady who's shaving her hair, Veronica, for raising funds, she was the lady who, during one of my retreats down in Jhanagrav, 9-day retreats, was getting so miserable because she was under the impression that when you meditate, you're supposed to be happy. And always have a big smile on your face. I'm meditating, I'm having a good time, I'm enlightened, Because sometimes people think that spiritual people should always be happy. And she was thinking she was the only person on the retreat who was miserable. and everyone else was having a good time. And she felt so out of place. And she came to see me wanting to leave, saying, I feel so grumpy. And I know I'm not supposed to feel grumpy. I'm supposed to be meditating. And I'm supposed to be happy. And I'm supposed to be getting enlightened. I'm supposed to be spiritual. Spiritual people are supposed to be happy. You know that it's really, that's quite an important point. They have, like, in Sydney, I know there is, because I met the guy, he's supposed to be the chief happiness officer in a big company. Imagine that, chief happiness officer. Be happy or you get sacked. You don't belong in this company. Smile. If you're not happy, there's something wrong with you. So this poor lady felt so out of place. She felt such a failure. After 6 or 7 days of meditation, she was miserable. And worse, she paid for it. What a fool I am, paying all this money, I'm still miserable, it's not working. So she came to see me, wanting to leave. I said, hold on a moment. She was a lady. I went into the office and turned on the computer really quickly, made out in beautiful letterhead paper, the first ever grumpy license. The license was on Gothic script. I got some Gothic script. Made it just look really like some like degree you get from a top university. You know, for Bodhidharma Monastery. Grumpy license. This license allows the recipient permission to be grumpy at any time, for any reason, or no reason whatsoever, for the rest of her life. I think I actually said, and other lives too, until the coming of the next Buddha. Signed, Ajahn Brahm. And I dated it and gave it to her. So I I gave her a certificate. So it's okay to be grumpy, signed by me, your teacher. So you can throw that around, you can be grumpy now, you don't have to be happy. You know what happened? As soon as she saw that, she burst out laughing and all her grumpiness went. When she was allowed to be grumpy, she just couldn't do it. You know that psychology. She was trying so hard to be happy, she got grumpy. And when I told her she can be grumpy, she couldn't be grumpy anymore. She was laughing. I had a happy time for the rest of the retreat. Now that's psychology. Now monks, actually, I reckon that Buddhism invented psychology. And everybody takes a bit here and a bit there, and that's where we got our modern psychology from. But we understand the way the mind works. And so you can trust that works. Trust yourself. Just to be here you are. Because most of the problems in the human mind is we don't trust who you are. You're afraid of who you are. You always want to be someone different. You always want to be some superstar, some sort of beautiful person, really successful. That's the only way you think you succeed in life. And remember what I said, I think, even last week? What is success? You don't get successful to be happy. You don't get happy to be successful. Success is happiness. Whenever you're happy, congratulations, you are successful. As I say in retreats, if you're happy, you've arrived. Baby, you've arrived. You've arrived at happiness. That's where we're supposed to get to. So, when you trust in that, you trust in that beautiful psychology, just learning how to be content and be happy. Sometimes you ask, so what more do I need? I really trust in that, just contentment. Beautiful, beautiful contentment. Yeah, you go out there in the world and you do your stuff. You know, I just came back from Sri Lanka. Next week I go to Thailand to teach them more retreats, raise some more money for another monastery. Never my own, it's always for other people. I just, it's almost like hire a fundraiser now. That's me, Ajahn Brahm. So, I don't mind doing that, it's good fun. And it's for a good cause. You know, one of the things about being a monk, you know, not earning any money, not having any money, you know, I also want to do dana, I also want to give. I just remember the time when I was reading about this and I do editing another book this afternoon. When I was a student, I remember going to the Buddhist club in Cambridge University, and it was so boring. I'd always go asleep and do those talks. That was one of the reasons. I was in your position when I was in my 18, 19, 20 years of age, sitting there listening to all these people nattering on about Buddhism and just really boring. So I made a point. I made a resolution. If ever I become a teacher, I'm never going to talk like that. I'm going to raise my voice to make people come awake. Tell a few jokes to wake people up. And never just talk, the Buddha taught the Four Noble Truths, suffering, the end of suffering. Oh, come on, make it sort of more alive and interesting. But anyway, one of the talks which I never did fall asleep was just a simple nun. I think she was an English nun, but Tibetan tradition. She went over to Sikkim or somewhere in the north of India, opened up an orphanage. Just being a nice, a kind work. And I was so inspired what she was doing, sacrificing. It was in 1969. And the following day, I remember going to my bank and taking out £10 from my account. Now, I was a student. Father was dead. Mother was just, you know, struggling, you know, living in a council flat. No money. That was 2 weeks' food money for me. That was 2 weeks, which I didn't starve, but I went hungry. And I had so much joy, you know, getting this £10 check for this nun and handing it to her. I love giving. You know, whatever I can give. You know, the last time I gave anything which was, you know, half useful was through Changi Airport. It's always traveling. And it's, I don't know what nationality she was. You know, if you're ever transiting in an airport, you know, you try and get some sleep. Getting some sleep in an airport, there's people all over the place, the lights are flashing, it's noisy. And this poor woman was just, you know, was on a bench, tossing and turning. And I had one of these iPads. I mean, not the iPads, you know, you use for, but, you know, the eye shades they give you for free on the aircraft. And you know, she needed it more than me, and I just gave it to her. And do you want these? So, oh yeah, thank you so much. Didn't cost me anything, but I get so much joy out of that. You know, whatever I can do to give, to care, whatever. So that's one way which I can give. Because I know trust in just giving and kindness, compassion. Whatever you do, you know, it's just a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful act. So any opportunity you have, you know, not just in temples, but any opportunity in the world, you can give something to somebody, give them a lift to go back home, just give them some food if they're hungry, just, you know, whatever it is, any type of giving, never resist that opportunity. But also, I must say this, going off subject as usual, off topic, if anyone gives something to you, never ever refuse it. They give you like a scarf or something, always take it, thank you so much. Even if you don't want it, you can always give it to someone later on. But I trust in that beauty of encouraging goodness in people. Ah, where was it? Good old Lakshmi, I think she passed away now. Many of you know her. I remember years ago, 25 years ago, I think this must have been, you know, she knitted a pair of socks for me. If you've noticed me, even in the cold weather, I never wear socks. I don't like socks. Even this time last year, I was in, where was I? I was in Korea, and I had to do this walk in the snow, minus 15 degrees. Just had Birkenstock sandals, but no socks on. Just, you know, bare skin. And it was on TV. And they had another very famous monk next to me. But all the cameras were on me. Actually, not on me, on my feet. How can this Western monk be walking in minus 15 degrees centigrade in the snow without any socks on? So I have got the most famous feet in South Korea on the TV. But I don't wear socks. But on this occasion, Lakshmi, just beforehand, she said, I've got a pair of socks for you. So what do? I don't say, nah, I don't wear socks, you should know that. That is really nasty. That's not actually encouraging the goodness and kindness in people. She knitted those socks by herself. So I put them on. But you know, she couldn't see me. And she was actually sitting just over there where our secretary Leho is sitting. And during the talk, you know, I decided to be a little bit sort of moving around. And I just very slowly just put my foot out. How can I do this? It's really hard to get out. Come on, get out. It's all caught up. I put my foot out. More and more. Until she could see it. And then she was there and she couldn't help herself. She said, oh, he's wearing my socks. And that's how you deal with generosity. It doesn't matter if you don't like wearing socks. Wear them. And later on, I took them off and gave them to someone who needed them much more than I did. But I wore them for that time. So never, ever refuse a beautiful act of kindness. That is what makes the world a beautiful place, when people share things, are kind to one another. Okay, it's okay to give, but learn how to receive as well. Many of you don't know how to do that. Someone gives you something, and say, no, I don't need it. It's true you don't need it, but the other person needs to give it to you. Don't think of yourself. Think the other person needs to give it. So take it. Then you can go around somewhere else later on. So that is how we learn just this beauty of a relationship. That's what I really trust. And that means that little by little we learn with this wonderful training just how to become much better human beings. When you're encouraged, when you are built up, you find you have the courage to trust more and more people. I trust each one of you as the nuns do. We don't cook. I don't know if I'm going to get any food tomorrow. It happened in the first years where I was here. People forgot to come to offer food to the monks. I remember that with Ajahn Chakwe in that first house we came to. The refrigerator was full. We could see it. We could smell it. We couldn't eat it. Had to be offered. We went hungry. It didn't matter. You don't die. But you trust. There's always people who are kind. In fact, just one last thing about trusting in goodness. That when the first monks went over to England, was the first place our monks went to, and they asked Ajahn Chah, what if people don't look after you and feed you? Because monks and nuns, we're very vulnerable. Now we can't cook for ourselves. We can't buy our own food. Even if it's in the refrigerator, we can't touch it. It has to be formally offered. It's one of our rules. We are deliberately dependent. Independence was said, no, don't be independent. Don't be self-sufficient. Be dependent on others, on purpose. What that meant was, we need you, as you need us. Anyone who becomes self-sufficient, independent, you're saying, I don't need anybody. And that is a lie. We do need one another. So be deliberately dependent on each other. Never be self-sufficient. Otherwise, when you don't need anybody, you're cutting off kindness and generosity, giving and receiving. The stuff which makes a relationship, a community, sharing. Be deliberately dependent. Even if you can do it better yourself, don't do it. Let someone else do it for you. That's called love, kindness, giving, sharing. So, I trust in that, and I trust that when we learn how to be vulnerable, monks were saying, what if people don't feed us when we go to England? And Ajahn Chah's response was, aren't there kind people wherever you go? Yes, kind people. Then you get fed. You get looked after. That's what I trust in. If they get stuck in the airport because the plane is delayed or cancelled and I've got no money, no mobile phone, nothing to actually to help. I trust in kindness. I'll always be a kind person somewhere to help. Remember one of our monks years ago, he arrived at Perth Airport from overseas. We asked him, what time are you coming? We'll pick you up. He said, no, I'm not telling you. He wanted to trust, to test the kindness of people. So he arrived at Perth Airport and just started walking. He only got about 100 meters when someone stopped. Where are you going? I'm going to Bodhinyana Monastery. I'm not going that way, but I'll take you. And you got a lift all the way. So often that's happened. Trust in the goodness of human beings. It's amazing if you trust in it, if you look for it, you find it. Your partner, maybe you've lost trust in them, they've let you down. If that's what happens, all you see in them is their badness, their maybe selfishness, their faults. Never do that. Look for the other part of them. If you do trust them, give them that trust again. Nearly all times, they will live up to that trust. She's forgiven me. He's forgiven me. And it's amazing that if you trust in a person's goodness, they tend to live up to it. If you just keep fault-finding, looking at their faults, they live down to their faults. They become what you expect them to become. You create them with your expectations. If you expect the best out of people, they live up to that. And again, that's the problem with politicians. We expect the worst in them, and they fulfill our expectations. How about expecting the best? Trusting. See what might happen. Could you do any better? So anyway, there's just different ways of looking at trust. And a world without trust is a world with fear. And I don't want to live in that world. So I'll always forgive and trust again. I'll finish off with one of my sayings. Someone once asked me in a public talk, how many times should you forgive? They were talking about their partner. How many times should you forgive them? And the answer was, always one more time. Thank you for listening. Very good. So what we got with questions, I trust there'll be some good questions from overseas. Oh, just by the way, there is a sutta class on Sunday, so anyone who wishes to come and listen to the teachings of the Buddha, translated by me, that's coming on Sunday. So let's see what we got for the sutta class, for the questions. Any questions from the audience here, other than can we go now? That's always the most popular question. For those of you who are staying, this is the next question. You've got some questions there. Woohoo! Here we go. Question one. A student in Austria, someone from Iran, and someone from Scotland. It's amazing every time just the extent of where this goes. Okay. They're being very nice over there. I trust people will be quiet. Dear Ajahn, how about trust in oneself or one's abilities? For example, I am a musician and I am never satisfied with my art, music and abilities, which makes me very afraid to play in public. You know, sometimes I go back after the Friday night talk and think, oh, I could have done it better. But I stop myself thinking like that. You give it your very best. And I always give my very best, whatever I do. You can't give more than your best. And even in art or public talks, if you aim for perfection, you misunderstand what perfection is. So sometimes, the little mistakes you make in a performance, that is what makes it unique. If you do a perfect musical performance, A robot can do much better than you. Artificial intelligence can probably play I don't know what instrument you're playing, say a violin, probably better than any human being. The technique will be perfect, but something is missing. The mistakes, the idiosyncrasies, the thing which sets artificial intelligence apart from a human being. And I often say, artificial intelligence, that doesn't mimic human beings. When we have artificial stupidity, then I think we're getting somewhere in imitating a human being. So, don't trust in your abilities. Trust in your freedom to make mistakes. Trust in the fact that perfection is not what you think it is. The perfection is being you. And only one person in the whole world can play like you. No one else. Don't imitate others. If you trust in that, your ability to be yourself, to be free, to actually to express just what comes out. I often say I never plan any talks. They just come out, sometimes really good, sometimes not so good, but I think I'm doing pretty well. Then if you can learn how to perform in public like I do, with absolutely no fear, and just let it come out, not blocking anything, then you'll find you will play not just in public without fear, you'll play really beautifully in public, because you're just expressing your abilities. I have a question about trusting our feelings. Is it right to trust our feelings when we're unsure about our life's decisions? I always say, never trust your gut feeling when you've got irritable bowel syndrome. So, that's another stupid joke. Is it right to trust our feelings when we're unsure about our life's decision? Yeah, it's okay to trust your feelings, but don't just trust feelings alone. Do the research, get as much information as you possibly can, but you can't get every piece of information. Let it just ferment, if you like, in your brain. So get all the information, then leave it alone, be still, be peaceful, and then let the decision come to you. Just like sometimes it takes time for everything to work its way through your intuition, what you're talking about, feelings here, and then you make that decision. And that's usually the much more accurate decision when it's not forced, it's not come through thinking and worrying. Information, silence, and then the feeling of the right decision comes up. And lastly, in life it doesn't matter which decision you make. There's no such thing as a right decision or a wrong decision. It's made right or wrong by what you do after you've made the decision. That is the most important time. Not before you make the decision. Decided to marry that guy, I'm going to make it work. After you made the decision, that's where the crucial time comes. Make it work. And last one from Scotland. I've been meditating for a couple of years now. Can I trust that if I keep the five precepts, I will make good progress in my meditation? Absolutely. Keeping things like precepts, being kind, being generous, being compassionate. Trust that every bit of kindness which you make. And five precepts are just being kind to yourself, your body and mind, and other people by being harmless. That's what precepts are, just precepts of harmlessness. Walking through this world, not hurting others or hurting oneself. And that, obviously, you can trust, that if you understand what they're there for, how they work, that's going to create a beautiful, beautiful mind. And a pure mind, a beautiful mind, a good mind is very easy to develop in meditation. Just like, you know, in relationships, in life, if you do practice goodness, kindness, virtue, generosity, forgiveness, those are all qualities which do raise you up above the normal person in this world. And that means that you can meditate without any remorse at all. Sometimes I look back upon my day, really busy. I look back and think, have I hurt or harmed anybody? No. Have I served and helped and contributed? Yes. And that gives such a huge boost of happiness. And once I have that happiness, it's so easy to meditate and be still. That's how it works. So, from Scotland, brilliant question. You can trust that, no problem at all. Okay, so thanks again. Any questions from the floor before we finish? Okay, very good. Okay, so now let's pay respects to Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, and we get some questions from people when they line up.